Welcome, everybody. We had more primary elections last night. They are wholly irrelevant to who will be the nominee for each of the two parties. We know that Joe Biden and Donald Trump will be the nominees. But there was a very, very interesting data point yesterday in Florida. Despite dropping out of the Republican primary race weeks ago, Nikki Haley still got more than 150,000 votes in the Florida Republican primary. And this is not a good sign for Donald Trump. And it actually does show some signs of hope in sum total when it comes to Florida and more generally. And that's what I want to talk about with you today. So first and foremost, results yesterday from The Washington Post, Trump securing 81% of that Florida Republican primary with a little over 900,000 votes, and Nikki Haley with 14%, 155,000 votes. And then Ron DeSantis long exited from that race, 41,000 votes. Christie got about 9,000. OK, so what is the most interesting part of this? It's not that Donald Trump won. It's not that Donald Trump won with 81% of the vote. It's that despite being the only person still in the race, 200,000 Republican voters in Florida, with Trump already having clinched this nomination, cared enough about voting for someone else that they went out and voted for Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis or Christie or Vivek Ramaswamy or the elusive Ryan Binkley or Asa Hutchinson. And that is potentially a sign that there is a non-insignificant portion of that Republican electorate in Florida that is going to be similarly motivated in November to go out and vote for someone other than Donald Trump, probably Joe Biden, or will stay home altogether. Let me put it a different way. If Trump has already secured the nomination, which he has, and you choose to go out and vote for someone else, despite knowing that it is going to have no impact on the nominee, you are not super likely to, in November, go out and enthusiastically vote for Trump. Now, you may still vote for Trump, but you are probably the type of person who will want to make a point in November as well. And my guess is that point is not going to be voting for Donald Trump. Now, alone, let's look at these numbers. Let's be super optimistic. Imagine that, I don't know, 40% of Haley voters don't plan to vote Trump in November. 40%. That'd be like 60,000 people. Well, that's not really going to make a difference in the general in Florida. When you look at 2020 and Trump won by, I think I'm going from memory, I think it was about 400,000 votes. So the disaffected Nikki Haley supporters alone aren't going to take Florida and turn it blue. But we have to remember that this isn't the only thing that's happening in Florida. Remember that we ran the numbers on the potential influence of Taylor Swift, just to pick something else and show you how all of these things together could stack up to really impact that race. We looked at Taylor Swift and we looked at the number of 18 to 25 voters in Florida. And we said, well, what if Taylor Swift suggesting people register to vote and eventually endorsing Joe Biden, which I believe she ultimately will, she did in 2020. What effect could that have on closing that 400,000 vote gap? And by itself, Taylor Swift's involvement in Get Out the Vote isn't likely to flip Florida from Trump to Biden. But what if that closes the gap by 100,000 votes and then disaffected Nikki Haley voters close the gap by another 60,000 votes? And then some people just choose to stay home and you start to build up a picture of how that 400,000 vote margin for Trump in 2020 could be reduced maybe to zero. But here's really the interesting point I want to make. Biden doesn't need Florida. So we can use Florida as an experiment, a thought experiment, to say it was a margin of 400,000 for Trump in 2020 between Taylor Swift and Nikki Haley and Here's how we could shrink that maybe to zero. But then we go further and we say, wait a second, to win re-election, Biden doesn't actually need Florida. And if we apply this same standard to states that were way closer, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, all Joe Biden needs to do is to do as well as he did in 2020. And if you start with 2020 and then you say, well, you've got people who voted Trump in 2020, we know they exist, who now say, I'm not voting for him again. We've been hearing their stories every other day for the last week. And then you start to say, wait a second, all Biden actually needs is to pick up a few of those folks in those key five states, and then Biden wins. So the point I'm making is there's a whole bunch of paths to reducing the margin of victory for Trump in Florida, and Biden doesn't even really need it. And if all that happens is Biden gets all the same states he got in 2020, Biden wins electorally with a significant margin. Now, this gets me, once again, I'm going to be saying this a lot, and we're going to have Bill Scheer on soon to fact check me. I don't think predictions about November are particularly useful at all. And if you've heard me say this the last couple of days, I apologize for saying it again. It's going to be relatively close. It's going to come down to just a handful of states, 5 to 7 states, and it will most likely come down to under 500,000 votes across those states. So anybody boldly making predictions about what's going to happen, it's really going to be nothing more than resulting, in the sense of whoever happens to be right will say, I knew it all along. My prediction was obvious. My prediction was so astute and prescient and timely and accurate. We all are in the same boat. It'll probably be close. It could go either way. It's going to depend on turnout and who stays home and who comes out to vote. And anybody making predictions to later say, see, I told you so. None of us really know, other than to say it'll be close and it'll depend on those five states. Let's look a little deeper now at some of yesterday's results, because there is a repugnant, reactionary, repulsive Republican who is endorsed by Donald Trump, who won his Republican primary for the Senate yesterday. And it is truly the stuff of nightmares. Bernie Moreno emerged victorious in the Ohio Republican primary yesterday, and he is a true extremist and is also embroiled in personal scandals as part of this campaign, which remind us of the disgusting double standard, the disgusting hypocrisy that exists with so many of these folks. So let's take it from the top. Associated Press reports Trump-backed Senate candidate faces Republican worries that he could be linked to an adult website profile. Okay. For Republicans eager to regain the Senate majority, Ohio offers such an opportunity, writes the Associated Press. But there has been mounting anxiety inside the Republican Party that Bernie Moreno may emerge with the nomination. And indeed, he did. He has shifted from a public supporter of LGBTQ rights to a hardline opponent, and is now confronting questions about the existence of a 2008 profile seeking, quote, men for one-on-one sex on a casual sexual encounters website called Adult Friend Finder. A caption under the username Nardo19672 read, hi, looking for young guys to have fun while traveling. Now, I'll tell you, I don't care about this. Morally, this makes no difference to me. Ethically, this makes no difference to me. What I care about is that Moreno calls himself, quote, absolutely pro-life with no exceptions. I care about the fact that Bernie Moreno is running on the vapid virtue signal of, quote, ending wokeness. I care about the fact that this guy is a hypocrite on gay rights, because he used to be pro-LGBTQ rights. I mean, listen, maybe he's a gay guy himself. I don't know. You know, what appears to be worrying Republicans here is that he had a profile on a gay dating site of sorts. But now he has changed his view on gay marriage publicly. He says that that the LGBTQ community is one of advancing a radical agenda of, quote, indoctrination. He has suspiciously settled a bunch of wage theft lawsuits that were brought against his network of car dealerships. He settled those lawsuits right before running in an effort, I guess, to avoid having a problem with some of his alleged practices as an employer. That's the stuff I care about. But if you're the Republican Party, I guess you care about the fact that He may be a gay guy. I don't know. But this is really the epitome of what is happening in the Republican Party. MAGA endorsed candidate with hypocrisy in his past, employer-employee relations problems in his past, horrible views on so many issues. And what they seem to care about is, oh, he had a profile on a gay dating website. Now, let me mention one other aspect of this. There is an interesting Midas Touch article. And by the way, I don't know if I mentioned, I met some of the Midas Touch guys in my D.C. trip a couple of weeks ago. Very nice guys. And they're running an excellent operation over there. And they have an interesting article about Moreno called Bernie Moreno posed with MAGA book burning candidate at Trump rally. Valentina Gomez, who burned LGBTQ affirming books, is a fan of Moreno. And this is just, it's another one of these. This is the sort of coalition that these folks are in. I'm going to play a little video for you here from the Tim Pool show. This is Valentina Gomez saying that restrictions on firearms are weak and gay. They are gay, she says. This is on the Tim Pool show. This is really weaponized stuff. This is the sort of person that Moreno associates with.
But without, you know, going on beating a dead horse, let's jump to this next story.
Well, let me backtrack over there, because, Tim, bad guys with guns are stopped with good guys with guns. And the Second Amendment is the only amendment that's going to guarantee the first one.
Right.
And countries that ban rifles, guns, or even flamethrowers are weak and gay, because you should be ashamed of yourself if you cannot defend your family or your community or yourself.
There you go. Very powerful pronouncement. Restrictions on firearms are weak and gay. I guess we're back to 1998. This is where they operate. Okay. When we say meet people where they are, meet voters where they are, this is where a bunch of them are operating. That's who Bernie Moreno is palling around with. So again, in our discussion of, are there interesting and important races you could get involved in? Well, Bernie Moreno won his primary. And so we're going to have to beat him in the general in November in Ohio. Not necessarily the easiest thing, but that is not a guy who I want as one of 100 U.S. senators. After voting for himself yesterday in the state of Florida, Donald Trump said he doesn't care about Mike Pence not endorsing him. He insulted Mike Pence, and then he delivered a bizarre word salad when he was asked whether he can come up with the money for the bond in his fraud trial. You will also notice, if you're watching these videos, that his wife, I guess technically she's still his wife, Melania, has we have proof of life of Melania. She appeared there to vote as well in the state of Florida. She was asked, and we will play this as well. She was asked whether she might appear on the campaign trail. She has been conspicuously missing from every Trump campaign event. Reports are that she is essentially being paid not to divorce Trump and that has renegotiated a prenup. It's all crazy. I don't quite care about it, but you have these right wingers who claim to say that the family is the most important thing. And, you know, they would never vote for an effectively single candidate, and blah, 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 blah. Not saying too much about Melania's absence. But let's start at the beginning. Trump asked, what do you think about your own former vice president not endorsing you? And Trump says, I couldn't care less.
Do you think he can't endorse you?
Say to what?
What's your reaction to the vice president saying that he can't endorse you?
Oh, I couldn't care less.
Now, I have to credit Trump with one thing. He got the phrase right. I couldn't care less. That's correct. I am sick and tired of I could care less. You couldn't care less. Trump gets it right. And I am not hesitant to give him credit for that. He got it right. I couldn't care less. Let's listen to the rest of the answer.
Oh, I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less. We need patriots. We need strong people in our country. Our country's going downhill very fast, very rapidly. Millions of people coming across the border, coming from jails, from prisons, coming from mental institutions and insane asylums, terrorists. We need strong people in this country. We don't need weak people.
Yeah. So Trump saying Pence is weak, I guess, because he didn't try to overturn the election. Trump repeating the lies that so-called mental institutions in other countries are being emptied out across the border. There is no evidence of that. But this is an unprecedented situation. And by the way, this clip is from Fox News, you may notice. On Fox News a few days ago, Mike Pence said he won't be endorsing Trump. That's major news.
it's not common that you would see such a rift between vice president and president that one doesn't endorse the other. And Fox News, since Pence broke the news on their channel, has barely mentioned it. Trump mentioning it, good for him. Trump asked, are you going to be able to come up with the money for the bond in the civil fraud trial? Trump says, I've got plenty of cash, but they're trying to take it from me.
Are you confident that you can pay $464 million?
I built a great company, one of the greatest companies anywhere in the country, especially when it comes to real estate, have some of the greatest assets in the world. And this is a rigged trial. This was a rigged trial by a crooked judge and a crooked attorney general.
Notice that there isn't an answer here, at least not yet.
And we're fighting it out with them. We have a lot of cash and we have a great company, but they want to take it away, or at least take the cash element away. Billions of dollars in value, billions of dollars in properties, but they'd like to take the cash away so I can't use it on the campaign. And this is just a corrupt group of people. It's election interference, and we'll see how the courts rule on it. And I'll be guided. Excuse me.
So no real answer as to whether Trump has the money. In legal filings, his lawyers have said he does not have the money. And of course, this is causing a real problem for Trump. There are many big time donors who are realizing if I give Trump money, it's probably going to legal fees. Maybe he'll find some way to funnel it into settlements, although it's still not totally clear to me whether that would be legal. So Trump has a real fundraising issue. He has a real money issue as well. Trump asked during this post-voting tirade about his comments regarding Jews who vote for Democrats must hate their religion and they must hate Israel. And they'd better be careful because Israel will get destroyed if they vote for Democrats. And Trump apparently defending all of it and even kind of doubling down.
Guided by the courts.
President Trump, do you think Jewish people who vote Democrat hate religion? Do you think Jewish people who vote Democrat?
I think that the Democrats have been very, very opposed to Jewish people. That's true. And to Israel. All you have to do is look at Senator Schumer. What he did with Israel is a disgrace. And I think Israel will probably not forget it very soon. It's a very sad situation.
Do you think a 16-week abortion ban is smart?
Say it what?
All right. So then now he's asked about the Pence part. So basically, Trump just doubling down, saying, yeah, you know, Democrats are against Jewish people. And I guess because Chuck Schumer levied some very sensible and sober criticisms of Benjamin Netanyahu. Now Schumer, who is Jewish himself, also hates Jews. It's all very, very bonkers stuff. Melania, appearing in public for the first time in who the hell knows how long, asked, will you be on the campaign trail? And she plays a little coy with it.
Mrs. Trump, are you going to return to the campaign trail with your husband?
Stay tuned
is Melania's answer, which I'm editorializing here. I apologize, but this is an opinion show. When I hear stay tuned, I'm hearing I have no interest in getting out on the campaign trail, but I may end up doing it. If I can negotiate a good enough deal in order to start doing some appearances. So there is Trump voting for himself. Maybe Melania voted for Nikki Haley. Maybe Melania is one of those 150,000 Nikki Haley voters. Who the hell knows? She doesn't seem pleased to be there. But we are going to continue to follow the path to the formal nominations over the summer, which we will, of course, cover. We'll take a break. So many things to talk about today. As the host of this show and also a consumer of news in general, one reliable source of record that I have turned to is the Washington Post. And they're one of today's sponsors, letting you subscribe for just 50 cents per week. The Washington Post just helps me go deeper on the news that matters most. Their journalists bring facts and clarity about what's happening in D.C., the economy, climate change, foreign policy, things I care about. I have always used The Washington Post to prepare for the David Pakman Show. It's a news outlet that is quality and provides fact-based reporting. And whether it's breaking news updates or comprehensive political and international coverage, thought-provoking opinion, dinner recipes, if that's what you want, a Washington Post subscription has something for every type of news reader. They bring stories that explain the world, teach you something, inspire you. A Washington Post subscription makes it easy to access quality, trustworthy journalism, and it's affordable too. Go to WashingtonPost.com/Pakman to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. That is 80% better than their typical offer. It's an amazing deal. That's WashingtonPost.com/Pacman to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. The link is in the podcast notes. I've had such trouble finding a great razor where I am not cutting myself or getting those nicks on my skin, which are so common with the cheap disposable razors. You have to meet our sponsor, Henson Shaving. Henson actually manufactures parts for the International Space Station and the Mars rover, and they are bringing that exact same precision engineering to the shaving experience. It hurts when you shave because blades extend too far, and thus they wobble slightly. But with their aerospace-grade CNC machines, Henson is able to make metal razors that extend just 0.0013 inches. That's less than the thickness of a human hair, which means a secure, stable blade with a vibration-free shave. It also has built-in channels to evacuate the hair and the cream. No more clogs, no more rubbing your thumb on the razor to get the hair out. I use Henson at home. Shaving is a great experience now. Henson wants to be the best razor, not the best razor business, which means you only need to buy it once and it's awesome. Go to hensonshaving.com/Pacman, add a razor and a 100-pack of blades to your cart, then enter the code Pacman to get the 100 blades for free. That is a 3-year supply. That's H-E-N-S-O-N shaving.com/Pacman. Use code Pacman. The link is in the podcast notes. The David Pacman Show has the show. That's this that you're hearing right now. But this is not the full experience. You can get the full experience daily by getting a version of this show stripped of all of its commercials, stripped naked, I would even say. In audio or video format, as well as the world famous bonus show, an extra show that we produce every day. You get all of that if you sign up on my website, joinpacman.com. It's an exciting thing to do, and it's the most direct way to support the work we do. You can also use the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24 at joinpacman.com. And a big thank you to the a couple hundred people who signed up in the last few days. Very much appreciate you. Joinpacman.com is the place to do it. We have already discussed much of Don Lemon's interview with Elon Musk. We interviewed Don Lemon on the Monday show about the interview with Elon Musk. But I want to focus in on just one element of that interview. This was an hour plus interview. There have been so many discussions and analyses done. And I want to focus in on one particular part that relates to content moderation. There was this moment that, you know, the thing about this Don Lemon Elon Musk interview is people are coming down on both sides of every question. You can look online and you will find commentators, pundits, as some like to say it, never understood that one, and analysts who say Elon Musk really got the best of Don Lemon when it came to DEI, or Don Lemon really exposed how little Elon Musk knows on the topic of DEI. Whatever. I want to focus in on the content moderation part, and I'm going to play a part for you where Elon Musk justifies anti-Semitic images, memes, and tweets, or excretions, as we now, it's now called X. We used to call them tweets on Twitter. Now they are excretions on X. Elon Musk justifies them by saying, listen, they're not illegal. So if we remove them, we are stifling speech. This is not the simple explanation that some are arguing it is. There are people thrilled with Elon Musk's rebuttal. I don't think it's super strong. I'll tell you why in a moment, but let's listen to this part of the interview.
Well, that's not was what the study shows. And you said you like transparency. I'm going to show you this. And
Don, you can get a study that will tell you whatever you want.
But these are just a handful of extremely, if you look at those anti-Semitic and racist tropes and tweets.
And if you're listening, Don is showing Elon some anti-Semitic memes, and they have them up on the screen as well.
As of this morning, they're still on X. And from your own content policy, these posts should have been deleted. So why haven't they been deleted? Why are they still there?
We delete things if they are illegal.
But these have been up there for a while.
Are they illegal?
They're not illegal, but they're hateful, and they can lead to violence. As I just read to you, the shooters you know, in all of these mass shootings, attributed social media to radicalizing
them. Don, you love censorship, is what you're saying?
No, I don't love censorship.
Then why are you asking?
I believe in moderation, but I don't believe in
censorship. Moderation is a propaganda word for censorship.
But don't you think free speech is one thing, right? Or not, you know.
Look, if something's illegal, we're going to take it down. If it's not illegal, then we're putting our thumb on the scale and we're being censors.
You're putting your thumb on the scale for moderating hate speech. I mean, you don't put out child pornography. That's not.
It's illegal.
Some people would say that's considered censorship. I'm just saying you.
So listen, there are lots of people who think, wow, what intellectual fortitude from Elon Musk, just dominating Don Lemon and showing him that he is a hypocrite, wannabe censor, stifler of free speech. The problem with this, if it's not illegal, we leave it up stuff, and content moderation is suppression of free speech. The problem with that argument is that Twitter takes down a ton of content that's not illegal. Bots aren't illegal. Spam isn't illegal. Harassment isn't illegal, but it violates the terms of service of Twitter, and Twitter often will take it down, but it's not illegal. So I think there's a second layer to this. You can take the position of free speech absolutism. You can absolutely take that position. And there are platforms which, at least when they launch, claim that that's what they would do. We are free speech platforms. If it's not illegal, we leave it up. It could be disgusting. I could disagree with it. But if it doesn't break the law, then it will stay up. You can take that position. The problem is that, officially speaking, X doesn't take that position. They have terms of service that don't say, if it's not illegal, we leave it up. They take down all sorts of stuff. Part of the problem, of course, is the selective enforcement, and the selective enforcement that leaves up these unhinged anti-Semitic things. So, you know, my final takeaway on this is it would be a stronger argument to take the if it's not a, because what is illegal at the end of the day? Not that much content is illegal. I mean, everybody always goes to child porn. Doxing. Is doxing even illegal? I don't even know that doxing is illegal necessarily. A lot of this has to do with jurisdiction and different things. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'm not a legal expert. But the point is, they take down content that's not illegal all the time. And so we have here an explanation from Elon Musk that doesn't even match what the platform is doing. So my takeaway at the end of the day on the interview is, for all of the criticisms of Don Lemon that came in, Don could have done a fawning, cheerleading interview of Musk in order to keep the gig, keep the lucrative cash. Maybe it included a Cybertruck, maybe it didn't. Don was coy when I asked him about it on Monday. And Don Lemon didn't do that. He did a real interview by standards. He's lost money in distribution for it. Okay. On some of these things, Elon Musk sort of had a retort. On a lot of them, he didn't. And the problem is that a lot of people watching this interview think that some of these answers from Elon Musk are really ironclad, super strong. Is it illegal? If it's not illegal, you're just advocating for censorship. Well, not really. Your terms of service, by that definition, are censorship, and you're applying them only selectively. And you certainly don't have a policy of, if it's not illegal, we leave it up. So you have to sometimes be able to think one layer beyond what's being said to analyze whether these are explanations that make sense. This explanation from Elon Musk made no sense. And on the facts, Don is right. It has become a cesspool of this sort of stuff. You know, I barely tweet anymore. Every once in a while, I'll post something and I go back and I look at the replies, and they are overwhelmingly just anti-Semitic replies to me as an individual, trolling, nonsense. It's become a borderline worthless platform. And at one point, it was quite a worthwhile platform for us as a show. It's sad to see it. A desperate Donald Trump is now melting down that he may have to, quote, fire sale his properties in order to get the cash he needs to meet the bond, in order to appeal the civil fraud judgment against him for hundreds of millions of dollars. This is some wild stuff. Couple of reports on this. The Hill reports Trump says he'd have to hold a fire sale of properties to meet the $464 million bond. The New Republic writes, still unable to post bond, Trump has most crazed meltdown yet. Donald Trump has no idea how to post bond in the fraud trial, and he is absolutely losing it. And indeed, Donald Trump posting to his platform Truth Social,
Truth Central,
quote, Judge Engoron actually wants me to put up hundreds of millions of dollars for the right to appeal his ridiculous decision. In other words, he is trying to take away my appellate rights away. I'm sorry, trying to take my appellate rights away from me when I have already won at the appellate division, but he refuses to accept their already made decision. Nobody has ever heard of anything like this before. I would be forced to mortgage or sell great assets, perhaps at fire sale prices. And if and when I win the appeal, they would be gone. Does that make sense? Witch hunt, election interference. You know, this would be nothing other than consequences for the actions of Donald Trump. He might have to do that. That's true. Would that be unfortunate for him as an individual? Without a doubt. But the reality is that this is the sort of thing that sometimes happens. People sometimes end up in situations where, you know, not everybody can afford the high-priced lawyers that Donald Trump can afford. And there are lots of situations where middle-class people are accused of a crime, whether they are guilty or not, they are in a position to have to hire a lawyer. And sometimes they mortgage their houses to get lawyers. That's a reality. Is it an unfortunate reality? Sure. But it is not exclusive to Trump. There are many situations. In fact, I was just reading the great book. I just finished it. This thing is 750 pages. The book Five Families by Selwyn Rabb. It's about the history of the Sicilian mob in the United States. And there are many stories in there of defendants who have to pay $200,000, $250,000 for a lawyer to defend them. And when the capos, the leaders, the godfathers would abandon them, they would have to sometimes mortgage their home in order to pay for a lawyer. This has nothing to do with guilt or innocence. We have a situation where it happens to lots of people. It's not unique to Trump that he might have to mortgage or sell assets in order to pay lawyers or judgments. And what's even funnier is that Trump may finally learn what those properties are really worth. And what I mean by that is part of the problem here, part of the fraud Trump committed is lying about the value of the properties. He will very quickly learn that things really are worth only what those are willing, what others are willing to pay for them or what others are willing to lend you against them. And it is, there's sort of an irony that Trump's own assets not being worth what he says they are, which was the origin of this judgment against him, may be what limits his ability to make bond. After the break, we will talk about when could the property seizures start if Trump can't come up with the money, who will do the seizing, and how will it all work? We'll take a quick break. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube at youtube.com/The David Pakman Show. By the way, the next book in the children's book series is out tomorrow. Think Like a Voter. I'll tell you about it more on tomorrow's show. Magic Spoon has been sponsoring The David Pakman Show for years now because my audience just can't get enough. And here's why. Magic Spoon has reinvented our favorite childhood cereals to taste great, but with 0 grams of sugar, 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net carbs. It's a high protein, keto-friendly way to relive those Saturday mornings with your favorite cartoons, but with only 140 calories a serving and without all the sugar. My favorite flavor is maple waffle. I grew up in New England, okay, but it also comes in familiar flavors like cocoa, fruity, frosted. You can also check out Magic Spoon treats, which are sort of like the marshmallow treats you had as a kid, but only 1 gram of sugar, 1 to 2 net carbs, and packed with 12 grams of protein. Magic Spoon treats are the perfect on-the-go snack. They come in 4 great flavors, marshmallow, chocolatey peanut butter, blueberry muffin, and double chocolate. Go to magicspoon.com/Pakman to try Magic Spoon cereal and treats for yourself. Get $5 off with the code Pakman. The info is in the podcast notes. All right, let's go now to the potential seizing of Donald Trump's properties, which could start this Monday. This Monday, March 25th, it could all begin. Let's discuss how it would go down. Interesting article in Vanity Fair by Bess Levin, which reads, Letitia James could start seizing Trump's assets on Monday after the ex-president admits he's too cash poor to pay $464 million civil fraud judgment. We already know so many of the details. Trump clearly doesn't have the cash to pay for that bond. Donald Trump may have to sell some of his properties in order to pay for it. But the next possibility, the next layer of this, is that the properties could actually be seized. And this is very, very interesting. The article explains all of the steps that have taken place so far. But then we get to this critical part of it. A full appellate court panel is going to hear Trump's request for a stay of enforcement on the civil penalty. What does that mean? Enforcement on the civil penalty? Well, as is often the case, if you have a judgment against you and you don't have the money, the state starts to seize assets to start to chip away at that civil penalty. In Trump's case, it would be his properties, which, as far as we know, are really the bulk of his net worth at this point in time. New York Attorney General Letitia James already gave the president a 30-day grace period to put up the bond. And if she doesn't extend it come March 25th, she could start seizing his assets. As she said in February, I look at 40 Wall Street each and every day, referring to the downtown Trump owned building. You can't even imagine the degree to which Trump will be wildly triggered if indeed they start seizing his assets. Would it be unprecedented for a former president with a massive dump of judgments against him to start having property seized? It would be unprecedented. That's absolutely the case. We've never had a situation like this. When you have unprecedented inputs, you often end up with unprecedented outputs. Are there other ways out of this? Maybe. Here's one kind of funny example. Kevin O'Leary, the venture capitalist entrepreneur guy from Shark Tank, he's asked, what about you lending Trump the money to prevent this from happening? He doesn't really answer it, but he says this is all just so unfair.
But Kevin O'Leary, I think this is where it's going to go. Now, I was wondering, if he can't get to the Supreme Court, will you loan him the $460 million?
You know,
just to help, in order to protect America's name. Think of it that way.
To get the bond, he was able to get the 90 plus million from Chubb.
Yeah.
I don't know of a bond more than 90 million. I don't recall one.
Yeah.
You need cash to back up the bond insurance. And so now we're talking about the terminology of seizing assets. That's foreign language to an American investor.
It's un-American. This is Canadian Kevin O'Leary, by the way. Not that that really matters. He's saying what they're doing to Trump is straight up un-American.
Right. They want due process. Right. They want the appeal. That sounds like Venezuela. It sounds like Cuba. Mm-hmm. It's a really bad look for New York, but I think it's gone beyond New York now.
Right.
Bipartisan participants and financial services managers are not okay with this.
Right.
And getting very uncomfortable. And I think whether it's the Supreme Court that provides the adult supervision, whether it's somebody else, we desperately need for this kid's party for the adults to get home.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, of course. So Kevin O'Leary not answering whether he would loan Trump the money. Honestly, the truth is that Kevin O'Leary doesn't have the money. Kevin O'Leary is reportedly worth a few hundred million bucks. And obviously, as we have learned with Trump, it also applies to O'Leary. It's not all sitting around in cash. So the real answer would be, Larry, I don't have the money that Trump needs. That's the bottom line. I just don't have that amount of money. So we will see what happens. Monday could be a very exciting day, one way or the other, depending on what a court decides or what Letitia James starts to do. We'll keep an eye on it. A former Trump White House aide, Sarah Matthews, gave a very interesting interview on MSNBC to Jen Psaki the other day. Remember, of course, Jen Psaki is Joe Biden's former White House press secretary. She now has a show on MSNBC. Sarah Matthews was an aide to Donald Trump at the White House. She, Sarah Matthews, that is, weighs in on why she can no longer support Donald Trump. And it's very interesting to hear because this is now, we've heard from just your average voters why they can no longer support Donald Trump. We heard from Mike Pence why he can no longer support Donald Trump. But this is a little different. This is somebody who was involved in a lot of the nitty gritty, saw a lot of things, more in like a Cassidy Hutchinson style role. Let's listen to what she has to say.
Let me start with the comments from this weekend. What did you hear? I mean, you worked for Trump for some time. You obviously resigned, as I noted, on after January 6th. But he said it's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That will be the least of it. What did you hear when you heard that?
Trump oftentimes speaks in these kinds of incoherent, vague sentences. And so that allows people to draw to the conclusion that they want to fit their own narrative. But I think when you look at this sentence, obviously the Trump campaign is out there saying, of course, he's talking about the auto industry. But then why would he use a phrase like that's going to be the least of it immediately afterward? That alludes to something more. And in my eyes, yeah, sure, he could have been talking about the economy. But I think when you're looking at who the messenger was of this message, this is a man who helped incite a deadly insurrection on our nation's capital. So when he's using terms like bloodbath, it's really hard for me to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Let me
Former Trump aide. And this has become a propaganda battle, quite frankly. Oh, Trump was obviously not talking about a bloodbath in the streets. He wasn't talking about another one of the riots that he already incited a few years ago. He just meant the auto industry will struggle to sell cars. And I think the honest way to report it, there has been some dishonest reporting about the bloodbath comment. There's no doubt about it. Not to pat myself on the back, but obviously I reported it the way I think it should be reported. Trump warns about a bloodbath, which in literal terms he ties to the auto industry. But given the way that Trump signals his followers and given Trump's past actions and the context, we all know that he's talking about more than that. That is, to me, the most honest way to report this. It's not nothing the way that MAGA defenders are saying. It's not Trump deliberately saying, I am calling for violence in the streets if I lose. But he is using the same sort of violent language that we know he's used before. And I think Sarah Matthews knows it better than anybody. Here is another clip from this interview with Jen Psaki about Trump's fitness to serve and the relationship between Mike Pence's pronouncement that he won't endorse Trump and that reality.
I want to ask you about former Vice President Pence, because, you know, he said that Donald Trump calling January 6th insurrectionist hostages is unacceptable. Everyone has not said that, certainly. He also said he wouldn't be endorsing Donald Trump. I wanted to get your reaction to those comments and sort of what you think the impact might be or might not be, I guess.
I mean, I honestly got emotional when I heard these comments. I think I know Mike Pence to be someone who is a man of faith, a good man who only wants what's best for this country. And I think that it took a lot of courage for him to come out and say that he would not be endorsing Donald Trump. I mean, look, it's unprecedented. Mm. No vice president has ever said that their own former boss is not fit to serve. And he knew, like I knew when I spoke out against Trump, that that kind of effectively ends your career in Republican politics. And I think he knew that by saying he wasn't going to endorse him, that he might have been kind of signing away any future that he wanted in Republican politics. And so I admire him for coming out and saying that. I wish more Republicans would have a backbone like him and follow suit, because I know that so many Republicans privately say these things and believe Donald Trump is a disaster and unfit to serve and that January 6th is a horrific day for our country, but they would never publicly say these things.
Do you think he's going to stick with it?
Do I think? I hope that Mike Pence sticks with it. Obviously, I think he has said that he won't endorse him right now, but I think that it would be weird for him to go back on his word then and say he's not going to endorse him and then flip. So I think that it would make the most sense for him to stick to it. He did the right thing on January 6th, and I hope that he'll continue to do the right thing and not endorse him. And I don't think that I necessarily expect him to say he's going to vote for Joe Biden per se, but I don't think
Joe Biden's expecting it either.
Exactly. But I do think that it is a huge statement for a own vice president to say that he is not going to support his former boss. And
you are going to hear, we already heard it from Trump and you're hearing it from other MAGA people, that it's no big deal, really, that Mike Pence isn't endorsing Donald Trump, that he's not voting for Donald Trump. Yeah, who really cares? Sarah Matthews is absolutely correct. And she's in a position where she's willing to say it, where a lot of these other cultists aren't or aren't yet. It is a major deal that your own former vice president, who, by the way, your supporters wanted to kill, right? That's not a small detail here, that your own former vice president isn't endorsing you. One last a bonus clip. Speaking of former Trump advisors, here's Alyssa Farah Griffin also weighing in on the fitness of Trump.
Pence coming out, this is a person who's been in the conservative movement before anyone even talked about Donald Trump in politics. There are people like me all over the country who trust him. They think he's a man of faith. He's likely who brought them around to Trump in 2016. And for him to say this, I mean, I teared up when I saw it because I said on this show, nothing will break my heart more than if Mike Pence endorses Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And he didn't, because he knows better than anyone. This man is historically unfit and he's dangerous. And quickly, I want to say, I think world affairs played a role in this too. Donald Trump refusing to support Ukraine. I met with the former president of Ukraine, with Vice President Pence. I've been to Poland to visit our troops. I've been to NATO meetings with him. He fundamentally sees this as a tide-changing moment and a generational moment. Yeah. And I hope he keeps saying this loudly and other Republicans follow. Well,
now, obviously, I don't agree with Alyssa Farah Griffin about how lovely Mike Pence is. But the point that there is not just a rift anymore, this is the official divorce, for lack of a better term, between the Mike Pence wing of evangelical conservatism and Trump. Now, don't get me wrong. Indiana, Pence's home state, and the entire country remains filled with millions of so-called Christian Republicans who love Trump and absolutely plan to vote for him. But the fact that we are now seeing not only people at the advisor level, not only people at the staff level, but even people as high as Pence say this has to end. Romney, Christie, these are all different wings of the Republican Party. It represents, as we see in the voting, about 40% of the Republican Party, 40% of the Republican Party before everybody else got out that was voting for someone other than Donald Trump. The practical question is just, will it be enough to keep Trump out of the Oval Office? I don't have the answer. It's up to us. I love my Helix sleep mattress. I've been sleeping on Helix mattresses for years now, which is why I asked them to be a sponsor. You actually take their famous sleep quiz, takes just a few minutes to answer questions about your sleep preferences, body type, sleep position, whether you have back pain, and Helix will match you with a mattress that's perfect for you, which is really unique and helpful because a lot of people don't know where to start when buying a mattress. I certainly didn't. Their newest collection of mattresses called Helix Elite come with a built-in Glaciotex layer to keep you cool at night, an extra layer of foam for pressure relief, and thousands of extra micro coils for best-in-class support and durability. All of their mattresses ship right to your door, totally free. They come with a 10 or 15-year warranty, and you get 100 nights to decide if you like it. My audience also gets a whopping 20% off all orders, plus two free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/Pacman and enter code HELIXPARTNER20 at checkout. That's helixsleep.com/Pacman. Then use code HELIXPARTNER20 to get 20% off and two free pillows. The info is in the podcast notes. As we said yesterday, sometimes bad things do happen to bad people. And Peter Navarro spent his first night in prison last night. We reported to you that he was expected about 2 p.m. in Miami. Trump's former economic advisor serving 4 months starting last night in prison for in jail for his contempt charges. He did show up on time and make some wild, unhinged declarations complaining about Hillary didn't go to prison. I know it's completely crazy. It's 2024. They're still living in 2015, 2016. It's still about Hillary's email somehow. Peter Navarro saying it's all unfair and Hillary didn't go to prison and all of this different stuff. Let's listen to a little bit of this tirade and microphones waiting for Peter Navarro, who I hope his first night in prison was good. Genuinely. Let's listen.
There were more FBI informants up on Capitol Hill that day, possibly instigating that crowd, than the FBI itself could keep track of. There were stories about it.
I love the screaming of how you're lying. I love that in the back. It's atmospheric in the background.
Why did Nancy Pelosi not provide more Capitol Hill police? Why did Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, have the National Guard so far away?
I'm pretty sure Esper was fired months before January 6th by Trump, so I don't even know how Mark Esper could have done anything on January 6th.
And as for the destruction of evidence, sir, look, the things they are doing, you know, Hillary Clinton, like cleansing her, there's so many things these Democrats have done that would actually justify prison. You juxtapose that with me. All I've done is my duty. All I have done.
There's something incredibly, I don't want to call it ironic. I don't want to take pleasure by calling it satisfying. I don't know what the word is. Maybe you can help me with the right word. There's something about him still yelling about Hillary's the one who should be in prison. Hillary's emails, quite literally, as he is showing up for his 4-month jail sentence. There's really something about that that I can't quite put the right vocabulary on. Here is another bit of this tirade from a different angle on CNN.
When I walk in that prison today, the justice system, such as it is, will have done a crippling blow to the constitutional separation of powers and executive privilege.
Now, I hate to pause it already. I know this is fascinating to hear. He is convinced that somehow his case and his 4-month jail sentence are going to completely upend constitutional law and separation of powers. And it's almost like he thinks this is going to be the seminal case in history books about separation of powers. I hate to break it to him. It's not going to be.
The second and related story has to do with the emergence of lawfare and the partisan weaponization of our justice system.
Sure.
Which we have seen come to this country with a vengeance since the coming of Donald John Trump as president. And that keeps getting worse. So let me walk you through those two stories.
This should be good.
And again, I'm hoping as journalists, you will do some background, some research. I'm asking you to fact check everything I say today, and write the bigger stories here, which I think are the important ones. So let's talk about some facts here. I am the first senior White House advisor in the history of our republic that has ever been charged with this alleged crime. And I say alleged because for hundreds of years, this has not been a crime. And for 50 years, God, the Department of Justice has maintained the principle.
Yeah. Listen, this is super simple. He broke the law as the law exists today, and he now has to go to jail for 4 months. It's that simple. And this part of the speech was so whacked out that even Fox News cut away and fact checked it. Let's talk about that next. As Peter Navarro, Donald Trump's former senior economic advisor, was arriving in jail in Miami, Florida for his 4-month prison sentence, Fox News had to cut away and say what Peter Navarro is saying is not true. Here is Navarro pulling this whole alleged crime thing, and Sandra Smith cuts in. Maybe that Dominion lawsuit has them more sensitive to lies that get out on their network now, and says he's been convicted. You can't call it an alleged crime when he's been convicted. Listen to this.
Of absolute testimonial immunity. And it was only with my case that somehow that has changed. And here's where the homework is, because the big constitutional separation of powers are these. Can Congress compel a senior White House advisor, what they call the alter ego of a president, to testify before Congress? And executive privilege goes back to George Washington and his remarks to the Congress regarding the Jay Treaty. And he said,
very simply and clearly, succinctly, elegantly, that to write to the Congress, he said, I cannot command you.
Imagine being so deluded that you think any of this is relevant to the fact that you just you broke the law and you're going to jail now. That's all it is.
Members of Congress to come to me. You cannot command me to come to you. And the reason is the
all right. And he will be reporting to that prison 2 p.m. Eastern time there in Miami to serve his 4-month prison sentence. He began by saying not about me. He said this is about a crippling blow to the justice system. To fact check there, it is no longer an alleged crime that he'll be serving this 4-month sentence for. He has obviously been convicted and there was no evidence that did that would have excluded him. Per executive privilege from testifying. So John Roberts just on Monday refused to delay his prison time. He continues to appeal his conviction.
Yeah. So listen, even Fox News knows that this is the bottom of the barrel. There was no argument for executive privilege granting him the ability to ignore these requests to come and testify. He broke the law as it exists today. You can argue that this is not as the founders intended. You know, we've made that argument when it comes to gun safety laws. Hey, you know, when the founders wrote the Second Amendment, they certainly didn't have in mind a lot of the weapons that are now available. Oh, no, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they intended. Listen, the law is the law as it is today. He broke that law. It's not an alleged crime. It's a crime. He's been convicted. He's going to have to go to jail. So I'm curious, will these 4 months change him in some way? My guess is probably not. But we'll be waiting for him on the other side. I hope that the food is tolerable and that he had an acceptable first night in jail. Peter Navarro. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192-DAVID-P. This is a call from Juan. We haven't heard from Juan for a while. And his point in this voicemail is, if Trump's so bad, why is Biden basically tied with Trump? It's a good question, but Juan's analysis goes wrong. Let's listen.
I don't understand why you're so excited about Biden leading in some of these polls.
Well, first of all, excited. All of these, I believe that Biden is better than Trump. And so I want Biden to win for the good of the country. And so if Biden is leading in polls, I see it as a good thing. To call me excited, I don't know.
I mean, if anything, Biden is pretty darn bad, because if Trump is such a criminal and potentially will lose his properties and maybe even go to jail, and Biden is only up 1, 2, or 3 points, that is horrible, man. Horrible. If Biden is really as good as you believe he is or others believe he is, you would think he would be much, 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 much more ahead than Trump.
Right.
Yet he's only within margin of error ahead. So is he really that good?
This is a really good question, but Juan is on the wrong side of it. We've talked to Trump supporters. Luke Beasley goes to the rallies and talks to them. Adam Mockler goes to the rallies and talks to them. The reason Biden's not leading by more isn't because Biden isn't obviously better than Trump. It's because the country is filled with tens of millions of people who don't have a clue. And I know that you're not supposed, David, you're not supposed to do this. You're not going to bring people to your side. It's mostly left wingers that vote for Biden that are listening to me. And I'm going to speak honestly with my audience. We go to these rallies and we say to these Trump supporters, what do you like about Trump? They go, oh, I just love what he did, you know, for the average person. Oh, really? What did he do? I don't know. I don't have no idea. What do you like about Trump? Well, he's honest. Oh, really? What about the 30,000 lies? It was all made up. What do you dislike about Biden? Well, Biden's a Marxist. Really? What evidence do you have of that? I don't know. We have a clueless electorate. Now, I don't deny that there are some clueless people that vote for Democrats, too. Of course there are. But the entire Trump cult is based around proudly not knowing a damn thing. So Juan is right. It says a lot about this country that it's essentially tied, and it'll probably come down to under 500,000 votes in a handful of states. It does say a lot, but it's not because the contrast between Biden and Trump isn't stark. It's because we have tens of millions of people who have no idea what's going on. It's not politically correct for me to say it. It's not going to draw in Trump supporters for me to say it, but it's the reality. What do you want me to say? I wish it were different. The world realizes it. The world is laughing, but it's where we are. And we're going to have to try to figure out a way to keep Trump out of the Oval Office. We've got a great bonus show for you today. Make sure you're signed up at joinpacman.com. We'll talk about the new defamation lawsuit against ABC and George Stephanopoulos. We will talk about the Supreme Court saying Texas can go ahead and enforce its new immigration law. We will talk about the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Award ceremony that has been canceled over the recipients that have been chosen. What? All of those stories and more. Make sure you're signed up at joinpacman.com.